his father.
The following program is paid for by Barbara Arnwine.
The topics, views, and opinions expressed on the air and via All Igniting Change with Barbara Arnwine, platforms by host Barbara Arnwine Esquire, guests, and supporters are their own and are independent of any organization, entity. Nothing said on the show or any of its platforms constitutes a client-attorney relationship or serves as legal advice, counsel. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to Igniting Change, its platforms, or the show's host. It's time now for Igniting Change, a weekly provocative and empowering program where you, the listener, can ignite change. Now here's your host, Barbara Arnwine.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
All right now, welcome to Igniting Change. Oh, we want to welcome all our listeners from all over the country because we truly have a show that covers every one of us. We have so many important issues to talk about, and Daryl Jones, my mighty co-host, is here with us. And I just want everyone to remember that April 4th, is the 56th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. You're not going to hear about it in most media or in most circles, but don't forget. And that's why this fight for racial justice that we are engaged in, where we are fighting on so many fronts as they attack our HBCUs and so many other issues, that's why we got to be in this fight. So let me bring up my mighty co-host, who is the chairman of the board of the Transformative Justice Coalition and one of the most amazing lawyers in this country. I'm talking about none other than Daryl D. Jones. Hey, Daryl.
Hey, Barbara. It must be Tuesday. It must be noon Eastern Standard Time, because we're talking about Igniting Change Radio. And Barbara, my goodness, we're hitting it on three fronts today as we talk about Black Wall Street and what's happening down there in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma City. We're going to be talking about the Gen Z training that's coming up and the changes that these mighty warriors are going to be imposing as they embark upon this intense training while we're in Phoenix, Arizona. Barbara, you know, it's just amazing the things that we have the opportunity to talk about on this show. But before we go into it more deeply, Barbara, you know, you had mentioned that April the 4th, this will be the 59th commemoration of the shooting and the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I've got to ask you, do you remember where you were on that day? Do you have any memories of when that happened?
Oh, I remember it very well. I was in high school, barely in high school, and I heard about it, and I had just been accepted to the Claremont Colleges for that coming term. And I actually got on a bus. I was so distraught. I got on a bus and went to the Claremont Colleges, where the Black students had already started protesting, and I participated for 2 days in their demonstrations about the death of Martin Luther King and demanding change on the campuses to address so much of the racial inequality. I remember it very well. I'll never forget. It was stunning. It's like my soul was suspended in air during that whole time. I just was numb and at the same time totally alive.
And you know, Barbara, it's important that we lift up things like that because, you know, there are several people that, you know, that weren't alive at the time that Dr. King was assassinated, and they just don't remember. They don't know that feeling. You know, and it's part of the reason that you today are in Oklahoma for the Tulsa Massacre, to lift up what happened 102 years ago at this Tulsa Massacre. And Barbara, my goodness, what a show we have that's going to focus on that. And I know you're ready to bring up our first guest.
Oh, yes. And our first guest, we have a really superstar lineup for you today, everyone. And our first guest has been fighting on this issue of justice for the people of Greenwood and Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma, regarding the massacre that occurred in 1921. And there's been no justice, folks, no justice at all. And we know that the souls of those murdered, the hundreds who were slaughtered and murdered, that those souls cry out to us for justice. I am so happy to bring up Chief Igowali Amusan, who is a consultant and history recovery specialist. Oh, I love that. History recovery specialist, who is a highly sought after expert regarding the history of Greenwood. He's a former advisor to the Black Wall Street Chamber of Commerce. He's a founder of the Black Wall Street Memorial March, which has been active for the past 29 years. He's a descendant of three Tulsa massacre survivors. And he's the owner of the Real Black Wall Street Tour Company. He's a board member of many, many groups, and he's an executive producer of the documentary Oak Lawn, which focuses on the 1921 mass graves investigation. He's an active member of the African Ancestral Society, which has a social justice arm that works closely with Justice for Greenwood, the Terrence Crusher Foundation, and many other groups. He is author of the new book, America's Black Wall Street. Welcome to Igniting Change, Chief Amusan.
Thank you so much for that powerful introduction. I'm grateful.
Oh, it's the least. Yes, go ahead. Thank you for being on our show. You know, a lot of people out there may have been lucky enough to have seen Watchmen and have gotten some inkling of that there was this horrific, ugly massacre that occurred in 1921. Can you just tell people briefly about what happened and why this is something all of us around the country need to still be demanding that justice be served?
Yes, absolutely. I know for a fact that what happened in Tulsa, the majority of Americans locally and abroad have still kind of gotten it wrong. And I say that because what we have focused on, have intentionally been groomed to think about is the destruction, right? But never why. Why was it destroyed? Why did that community have to be destroyed and bombs dropped on American soil for the first time in U.S. history, right? And you have a Black Holocaust that happens before the Holocaust of, you know, the Jewish people. What's interesting is this. We built this place that you now know as Black Wall Street in the oil capital of the world. And people really underestimate the kind of power we were generating, not just economic power, right? But there was a political element that hasn't really been discussed. And, you know, that was one of the reasons I wrote my book, because I wanted to explain to America there's a source of power that, you know, we're still being greatly suppressed over, and that's politics. So what happened in Tulsa, the devastation that happened in a matter of 18 hours, and the unknown part of that journey is that we rebuilt 4 years after that event without any support from the city of Tulsa, without any support from any entity inside the city of Tulsa, with the exception of the Red Cross. And so now this fight for legal justice, it has been a continued thing. You know, my grandfather was a part of the 2001 lawsuit that Johnny Cochran and Charles Ogletree introduced to the court. My grandfather died, obviously, without justice because the court said that the statute of limitations had run out. So here we are again, you know, decades later. My cousin, DeMario Solomon, who's the attorney for the two remaining survivors, is now carrying that baton of justice. And, you know, we walk in that together. Our ancestors have put us on this pathway to really fight for restitution, respect, and repair.
Wow. And, you know, what people don't realize is that, as you talked about, all of these, 102 years of of injustice, of, you know, people fighting to get some kind of recompense and some kind of, you know, compensation. Because, you know, folks, not only did they destroy the community, which rebuilt 4 years later, but the continuing anger and hatred of Black political and economic power was so strong that in the you know, during the quote urban renewal movement, they used it to destroy the community more, to bring through a highway that basically destroyed, you know, what was then the rejuvenated community. So people, it is important to understand there's going to be a legal argument today before the Oklahoma Supreme Court. And Chief Anuson, we see this really, this is it. I mean, this is everything. There's this brilliant legal theory of a public nuisance that's being pursued. So the latches doesn't apply. But the judge below, bizarrely, inexplicably, you know, dismissed the case. And so this is why the Supreme Court of Oklahoma is hearing this case, correct, sir?
That is absolutely correct. And I would implore that anyone in the legal field, especially, you know, civil rights and things of this nature, if you're not already on this, you need to be on it. And I'll explain why. With a public nuisance, so when DeMario presented this case, he saw what happened with the Supreme Court. The Oklahoma Supreme Court and other courts across the nation who were fighting this opioid crisis and filing lawsuits against the pharmaceutical industry for the long-term effects and the nuisance that it caused in all of these major cities and rural towns. And he said, you know, we can leverage that. We can use that because if you look at the study, it actually fits what happened in Tulsa, not just in 1921, but as you said, also during the time of urban renewal, or urban removal, right, as we call it.
Right, exactly.
So what that does is it speaks to, we went in Tulsa, every city, hear me well, every city in the United States where Black people have suffered occurrences and events that have created a public nuisance that is very obvious, right, materially. You can see it in any community you go to that was once Black, or that is currently, you know, still predominantly Black. There are economic disparities that are blatant, that are very obvious. There's intentional blight that occurs in those communities, right?
Yes.
There are so many things that reflect what a public nuisance is, and a public nuisance has no statute of limitation, right? So people really need to get on board and prepare for this, not just for Tulsa, but for every Black community, every community that has suffered and injustice at the hands of a white supremacist system.
And, you know, Daryl, you and I have had the pleasure of meeting the two living survivors, Mother Randall and Mother Fletcher, and who are both, what, 109 years old? Thank you, God, for keeping them. And
yeah,
we lost, you know, Brother Red, you know, just in the last number of months. And it's just so important, Daryl. You've been here. You've been part of this fight. You know, what do you want to, you know, say at this moment to Chief Amuson, to everybody who is involved in this fight?
You know, Chief, I certainly want to thank you for being there and keeping the fight at the forefront of people's minds, just serving as that reminder. One of the opening things we did with Barbara was that she was reminding people what it was like when she learned of the assassination of Dr. King. I think it's equally important that we continue to remind people what's happening and what happened in 1921 in Tulsa and in Greenwood. And, you know, I know, Chief, that people can tune in at justiceforgreenwood.org /watch party to watch the proceedings and see what's happening. And, you know, could you share with our audience why you think it's important that people tune in at the justiceforgreenwood.org for its last watch party to watch the proceeding? And how is the community responding to everything that's going on now?
Yeah, the response has been wonderful, and thank you for your kind words. I really appreciate it. The community is highly responsive. You know, you're seeing a lot of support from different people who are actually throwing. There's different organizations and individuals who are.